Okay, so I want to wish everybody a Chanukah Sameach and welcome once again to the weekly shiur. And today we're going to talk about the Ramban. And I'd like to spend a bit of time actually talking about the Ramban in terms of his life and some of the episodes in his life. And after we finish talking about the Ramban and the episodes in his life, then hopefully we will move on and talk about his Perush. And that should be also very exciting as we talk about all different aspects of his commentary. Okay, so here we get going. The Ramban. I think we mentioned last time, 1194 to 1270, born in Catalonia in Girona or Girona. Now, the Ramban, as with all the people who were enormous Talmidei Chachamim there, they were all educated in worldly knowledge, certainly those who lived in Spain. And I think we already mentioned last time that the Ramban is unique in that he pulls three areas of knowledge, the whole school of the Ashkenaz of France, Germany, and the pool of Spanish knowledge, and also a third pool, that of Provence. But that's not the first thing that I want to maybe talk about for the Ramban. I mean, many people know a tremendous amount about the Ramban, I think I already mentioned last time, he is one of the only of our Parshanim who actually visited Eretz Yisrael. At age 70, he made Aliyah. He writes, and we have documents of how he writes, how he comes to Yerushalayim. At age 70, after the disputation, he's been expelled from Spain, and he comes and he only finds, he doesn't even find a minion there. He arranges no Sefer Torah in Yerushalayim, and he builds the community there, and he decides that he's not going to be satisfied with this, and he makes sure that they get a Sefer Torah from Shechem, and they make sure that people gather around, and eventually there is a minyan and a whole community in Yerushalayim. So the Ramban, even at age 70, makes things happen. The Ramban, in many places of Torah, of his commentary in the Torah, in his last edition of his commentary to the Torah, includes many places where he comments about, oh, now I've come to Israel and I've seen this place, I can testify the following about it. So the Ramban certainly has an incredible history to his life. We've all heard of the disputation in Spain where he had to defend Judaism against an apostate, Pablo Cristiani, and he won. And the amazing thing is the king had to admit that he won. I mean, he got expelled for it, but at least he won the disputation. And in fact, his writing there, it's written up in the book published by Chavel of Kitzvei HaRamban. However, the Ramban there has an incredible dialogue with Agadah, with Midrashim. How do I understand Midrashim? Do you understand them at face value? How do you take them as portrayals of the true ideology of Chazal? Because, of course, the church always bringing certain Midrashim to him and suggesting that there are certain ways to understand them. Sean says it's fine. Okay, sorry about that. Usually when people talk about the Ramban, they compare him with Maimonides. Usually they say that Maimonides is influenced by non-Jewish sources and Aristotle and philosophy, and the Ramban wasn't, that all his sources were Jewish, and he's much more traditional than the Ramban. Usually they say that the Ramban is a rationalist and the Ramban is a mystic. And those are generally true. But I would like to actually focus on a different perspective, and it's a perspective you'll find in Chavel's biography of the Ramban. The Ramban, in many cases, we could call him a defender of tradition. And I started talking about this last time when we spoke about the way that the Ramban is relates to Rashi and relates to the Ibn Ezra. And he said, if you remember, we read it last time, he said, I want to be connected to those earlier scholars. I'd like to deal with it. I mean, we're going to spend a few minutes talking about a few of the works of the Ramban, which discuss this. The Ramban's first book is a book which you'll find in the back of the Gemara. In the back of the Gemara, on the pages of the Rif, you have the Rif in the center, like in any Gemara, and then Rashi on one side, and Rabbeinu Nissim on the other side. But at the bottom of the page, you will find two books. One is called Hama'or HaGadol, and the other one is called Milchamot Hashem. And Milchamot Hashem is actually Nachmanides, the Ramban's first book. What is it? Well, here's the story behind behind the Milchamot. It's called the Wars of God. What war is he fighting? The Ramban said, well, basically what happened was like this. The Rif, Rav Yitzchak Fassi, he is the one who wrote the first, so to speak, commentary on the Gemara, and his halakhic opinions were taken very, very seriously. Along came somebody else from Lunil, from Provence, Rav Zerachya Halevi, and he wrote a book called the Baal HaMa'or. The Baal HaMa'or is the book that the Ramban contends with. And Rav Zerachya Halevi, known as the Baal HaMa'or, he writes a commentary on the Rif, arguing with all different points of the Rif. By the way, it's very cute because the Baal HaMa'or, his name. So that's one thing that we can say about the Ramban, and maybe we'll even see one or two examples today of that sort of thing. Another area that we can talk about, Nachmanides, the Ramban, is, and in contrast to Rashi, for sure, is the question of Mukdam, the question of chronology in Torah. It would almost be impossible to survey this, because in order to survey this, you need to have a very, very wide scope. But we might in future take an example of this. But let's simply put it this way. Most people who have studied Rashi at any level know that Rashi continually says, Ein mukdam u'muchar b'Torah, that the Torah is not organized chronologically or historically, that historical continuum is not important in the Torah, that the Torah can flip backwards and forwards. The Ramban, and maybe this connects with the point I made just a moment ago about his ability to see things on a wide canvas, the Ramban totally disputes this, and as much as possible, the Ramban asserts that the Torah is written with great chronological order. This is true whether we're talking about when Yitro arrived in the Jewish camp. This is true whether we're discussing the order of the Mishkan and the Egel. And this is true in all sorts of cases that Nachmanides will always try and assert that the Torah is written in order. So if anybody says to you, oh, but there's no chronological order in the Torah, well, that's true according to Rashi. But not necessarily according to the Ramban. In the vast majority of cases, the Ramban will say that the Torah is a historical, is in historical order. And by the way, just one aside, the Torah is clearly broadly in historical order. The Torah begins with creation and ends with the death of Moshe, and most of the events in the middle are written in order. We don't, for example, have the story of the Exodus, and then only afterwards go back to Avraham Avinu. And by the way, we could have done that very well. The Torah could have begun with Matan Torah and told us how the Torah was given, and then, I don't know, go back in history, but it didn't. And the Torah is broadly historical, and Rashi accepts that too. It is just that at times, Rashi says, that certain other editorial considerations override the question of chronology. And that's what he means by Ein Mukdam U'Meuchar b'Torah. The Torah is broadly historical, but not always, whereas the Ramban will try and make this happen almost at all times. We're going to see other aspects of the Ramban's commentary, and I think the best thing to do is to dive into the sources, because as you can see, we actually have quite a deal of text here. And let's try and look at the sources and see a few things about the Ramban. Maybe I'll already give you an introduction to what I would like to say about the Ramban. What I would like to say is that the Ramban is really, to my mind, the most comprehensive commentator that we have. What I mean by that is he always grapples with a variety of different approaches. Frequently you will find him making all different suggestions, analyzing them, and then coming back and suggesting them again. Well, I'll give you another example. The Ramban will say, I want to understand this al derech hapshat, according to the textual understanding. Then he'll say, al derech hadrash, okay, what is the meaning according to midrash, or he'll say, al derech rabotenu. And then he'll even say, al derech haremez, or al derech hasod, he'll go into Kabbalistic meanings. I think we mentioned that the Ramban was very connected to the Provencian tradition, Kabbalistic tradition. Some people even want to see the Zohar as being written in Chabad by Rav Moshe Zilion. In academic circles, that's true. If you don't want to say Rav Shimon Bar Yochai wrote it. And there was clearly a strong Kabbalistic tradition there, which the Ramban tapped into. And so what I'm saying is that the Ramban is frequently willing to understand the Torah in a multi-layered way, and he's willing to see multiple truths sitting side by side. And that's really what I wanted to present to you in this opening text, which comes from the Ramban to Breishit, to his introduction to Breishit. Let's see if we can see a few lines. It's a very long text. I've tried to divide it into four sections, just for the ease of the whoever's following. But let's see if we can look at a few lines of the example. I should say before I start, I meant to say before I started, there are actually some very interesting Rambans which connect to Chanukah. And I decided not to do them because they don't necessarily give the Ramban from a methodological perspective. But there's a very famous Ramban at the end of Vayechi where he blames the Chashmonaim for not only being high priests, as they were Kohanim, but they should never have taken on the royalty. And he comes out quite critical of the Hasmonean dynasty for that. Likewise, a very famous Ramban on Bahalotcha, where he discusses the Chashmonaim. Very, very interesting. The Ramban was clearly aware of history, and he read up a lot about history, and he knew his historical, you know, certainly the history of Bayit Sheni, the Greeks, the Romans. He had a full comprehension of that. So that's also something fascinating, that wide historical perspective. But let's see the Ramban in his introduction to Bereshit. And I'm particularly bringing a large swath of it so that you can understand where he's coming from. Okay, it's on the first page of the sheet, the one which has the heading Ramban, and I'm reading from number one, Ramban Bereshit Hakdama. He says like this, Moshe Rabbeinu Katava Sefer Hazeh. Moshe Rabbeinu wrote this book, in other words, Bereshit Im HaTorah Kulat Mipir Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Moshe Rabbeinu wrote the whole Torah from God. And he says, if Moshe writes the Torah, this is a very cute observation, I'll call Panim haya nachon shichtov b'tchilat sefer Bereshit v'edaber Elokim el Moshe et kol hadvarim ha'ele leimor. Maybe the Ramban should have started Bereshit with, and God said all of these things to me. Interesting. Why doesn't the Torah begin with v'edaber Hashem Moshe leimor? Aval haya ha'inyan nikatei stam m'nei shelo katav Moshe Rabbeinu ha'Torah k'medaber ba'ad atzmo k'nevi'im shematkirim atzmam. He says, written as if a third-party narrator were giving the Torah. And he says he didn't want to write the Torah as if he was speaking on his own rights, like other Nevi'im, as in Yecheskel, where it says, Vayhi Devar Hashem Elai Ben Adam, or Yirmiyahu, where it says, Vayhi Devar Hashem Elai Lemor. Aval Moshe Rabbeinu Katav Kishlishi HaMedaber, he writes as a third person, the narrator, an observer, an objective observer. Vayedaber Elokim or Moshe. He doesn't write Vayedaber Hashem Elai or Vayedaber Elokim Elai. Moshe wrote the entire Torah from the outside, detached. K'medaber ba'ad shnayim achirim. Now you might say, why is this the case? So the Ramban, number two, goes to carry on explaining this. V'hatam l'chtivat ha-Torah b'lashon zeh mipnei shekadma l'briyat ha-olam. Fascinating. He says, the Torah is written in this way because the Torah is not time-bound, it's not necessarily related to a particular time, it even predated creation. Ein tarich omar, it certainly predated l'reidato shel Moshe Rabbeinu. As we have by tradition that the Torah was written in black fire on white fire, whatever that means. When Moses wrote the Torah, the five books of Moses, he was like writing, copying out from another book. In other words, Moshe is not telling his own story, he's telling a story way beyond himself. Now this is strange because, of course, the Torah does tell us history. But the Ramban wants to claim that the essence of the Torah is not the historical essence. And here he's saying the following. He says, Im kein kol ha'ne'emar b'nevuah, everything that you hear about from nevuah, ni ma'aseh merkava, from the secret of God's chariot, u'ma'aseh b'reishit v'hamekubal b'hem l'chachamim toldot im arba kochot shebetachtonim. He starts talking about all sorts of powers in the world, the four powers of the lower world. Maybe he means, you know, earth, wind, fire, and water. And koach ha'mechtzavim, koach tzemach adama, the idea of the mineral, the vegetable world, nefesh ha'tnuah, the idea of living creatures and humanity. B'chol ha'nimtzah le'moshe Rabbeinu b'sharei ha'binah ha'kol nechtav b'torah b'feirush o shu muzah b'tzivot o b'gemakriot.
He says there are all sorts of secrets in Torah which are hidden in the words, or maybe even in the letters, or in other things. The Ramban here is really showing his Kabbalistic colours. He's showing that he understands that the Torah can be read in all sorts of different ways, with all sorts of secrets about creation, of being, of the very existence of the universe, are written in the Torah. But in a few minutes he's going to outline to us that they're not at surface level, right? He even mentions, if you look at the last line, number two, he says, for example, the famous Talmudic tale where Moshe Rabbeinu goes up to heaven and finds God tying crowns to the letters. Every crown, every form of a letter has some significance. And again, we all maybe have seen certain Kabbalistic paintings and drawings which deal with the letters. The Ramban would certainly identify with those. Maybe to understand one perspective where the Ramban understands things, if you look at number three, Od yesh biyadenu kabbalah shel emet, we have a, and when he says kabbalah, he usually means tradition, but when he says emet, he means what we now call kabbalah in the sense of mysticism. Ki kol ha-torah kulo shemotav shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the whole Torah is made up of God's names. Now what does that mean? She'atevot mitchalkot l'shemot binyan acher. Now, in other words, you could configure words differently. As he says at the end of this line, paragraph 3 here, the second line, Tugon, instead of writing Bereshit bara Elokim, you could write Bereshit bara Elokim. V'chol ha-Torah kein milvad tzirufeihem. In other words, he says the Torah could even be written in some other configuration of words. What does this mean? So it seems like what he wants to say is there are all sorts of secrets hidden in the Torah and multiple meanings. Now, the reason why I'm mentioning all of this and reading all this text is because I actually want to reach number four, where the Ramban says what he wants to achieve in his Perush. He says, "Bechtivat Perush haTorah, aval et nahag k'minhag harishonim lahaniach dat haTalmidim yagiu hagalut v'hatzorot." I am going to deal with, in the same approach as those who came before me, and he probably means people like the Bechor Shor, the Radak, the Ibn Ezra, and Rashi. I'm going to teach the Talmidim who are tired from Galut and from persecution. I'm going to teach them Hakorim Ketzidam B'Shavatos, and people who are learning Parashat Shavua over Moadim, V'Limshoch Livam B'Pshatim, and I'm going to teach them B'Pshat, U'B'Ktzat Dvarim Imim L'Shonim U'Liyodim Chayim. And also a few tidbits, a few points of interest for those people who are looking for them. He seems like he's referring to, on the one hand, Pshat, and on the other hand, Drush. The El Chanun Yechanenu Bevarachenu, and God, the Merciful One, will bless us, and we will find Chaim Maseichel Tov, we will find a good favor, a good reviews, Be'enei Elokim Adam, in the eyes of God and man, Evi Bebrit Ne'emana. He said, in this parish I'm going to bring you lots of Kabbalistic secrets. And if you don't know Kabbalah, ignore them. If you don't know Kabbalah, just ignore them, he says. Any Sitrei Torah, Ani Modion Emana, I'm telling you faithfully, Shelo Yisku Davar, you won't understand a word if you're not Kabbalistic. You won't understand even the first level of understanding. In other words, what the Ramban is saying is, I'm going to bring Kabbalistic comments, but if you're not a Kabbalist, no point reading. You won't get any of it. Two more lines from a different book, the Sefer HaMitzvot, where he says, V'chol makol shenidrash lahem b'inyan mashal umlitza yomru ki shnehem emet p'nimi v'chitoni.
You can have pshat and you can have drash, and they can both be true. You can have multiple meanings and they can be true at the same time. He says, I'm going to give you a perush al pi pshat. I'm going to try and work out how the parshiot work. But you know what? I'm writing a perush alongside it with Kabbalah. It's also true. Because the Torah predates the world. There are all sorts of secrets here. And if you don't get Kabbalah, so you'll just read the pshat. What I'm saying is that the Ramban, I find the Ramban amazing, and I have to be honest, I love on a Shabbat picking up the Ramban, because the Ramban seems to really span all these bases. On the one hand, and to the pshat, to the meaning, the language, the context. At the same time, he relates to Chazal and tries to understand it, and we saw examples last time. Where he actually breaks new ground in understanding of Chazal, still retaining his traditional leanings, which we spoke about at the beginning of today's class, always adopting the more traditional approach, or trying to. And yet at the third level, we don't only have Pshat, we don't only have Drash, but we have a Kabbalah, Sod. He doesn't really distinguish so much between Remez, Sod, or any of those, I'm not quite sure the differences, but that whole level of Hidden Torah, he also relates to. So what I'm saying is, he'll divide up his language to pshat, drash, and remez or sod. So that's what we have here. And I put on the second sheet an example of this. I'm not sure how much we're going to get through, but okay, there are any number of examples, and I tried to find an example which was pretty, and it wasn't too complicated with other additional midrashim and references, and that's why I chose this example. I looked around the Parashat Shavuah, but I wasn't so successful in finding something so suitable this week, so maybe I missed something, I don't know, but okay. We're going back a couple of Parashiyot to Parashat Toldot. And there we read of the different wells that Yitzchak was digging in the land of the Plishtim. Now the Ramban is going to relate to a particular problem in the Pesukim, so let's read some of the Pesukim. Pasuk Tevav, V'chol ha-beirot asher chafru avdei aviv b'nei Abraham aviv, sismum Plishtim v'yemalhu masar. All of the wells which Abraham had dug in his time, the Plishtim with earth. And now Avimelech turns around to Yitzchak, Pasuk Tetzvayim, Vayom Avimelech and Yitzchak, Leif me, you're too strong for us, you're too rich. Vayelech misham Yitzchak, Vayicham Nachon Grar, Vayishev Sham. Yitzchak leaves and he goes to Nachon Grar. Vayashav Yitzchak, Vayachboret, Vayirot HaMayim, Asher Chafru B'nei Abraham Aviv, Vayisamum Plishtim Acharei Mot Abraham. And now Yitzchak digs the wells that Avram had dug. And we have a big question here, which is, I don't understand. It says that the Plishtim had stopped up the wells, but now he's thrown out by Avimelech, and then he redigs the wells. I don't understand, he's been thrown out. What's going on? The Ramban tries to deal with this, and he says the following. If you have a look here, in the commentary, Mum Kodem Shenasai Migrar Chazar V'Chafron. Basically, Rashi understands that we're talking about the same well. He went and dug the wells which were mentioned in verse 15. In verse 18, he manages to redig, and he says. Now the Ramban is talking. It seems from Rashi, Shehem ha-be'erot ha-niskarim kam. These are all the same wells. Kamo she'amar, sitmum pelishtim v'yemal ufa. V'ze'in el-ukein. He says, it can't be. And he's not coming from tradition here, he's coming simply from the basic of the text. Ki he'ach yitnu lo heim rushut. How are they going to give him the permission? V'heim amru, takalahim lanu imne ha-gayasot. Again, here he's actually relying on a midrash. What was the interest of the Plishtim? Who would ever block up a water source? it seems counterintuitive. I mean, if you have water, you might throw at it with earth. Answer, they were worried that they would attract the attention of various enemy armies who would be looking to attack them because of their water. And go to another city. Ve'ulai einena mimalchuto af alpi shehu be'eretz plishtim. And maybe he is completely outside his kingdom, even though he is broadly in the area of plishtim. Ve'sham be'erot acherim shechafa Avraham shegar b'makom ahu yamim rabim. And these are other wells. Here the Ramban is saying that the whole story is a story, and he's explaining all the pshats of how it happens, etc., etc. However, if you look at the next commentary, verse Chaf, Vayikrashim Abe'er Eshek, you will see how the Ramban understands this on a totally different level. He says here, Yisaper HaKatuv Yarech V'inyam HaBe'erot, that the Ramban says, the text goes on at great length about the Be'erot, Ve'ein B'Pshutei HaSipur To'elet. It seems like the pshat of the story has no use. It doesn't really show great honor to Yitzchak. First of all, I guess what he means is Yitzchak had far more trouble than Abraham. He gets thrown out. Well, where do we see the great qualities of Yitzchak here? I have to say, I think there are ways to see the great qualities of Yitzchak, but the Ramban clearly was bothered by this. And he says, there's something hidden. This is coming to tell you future events. In other words, the Bible is not just telling us about now, it's telling us about future times. It's talking about the Beit Midash. And that's why it is a source of water. And the first one is called controversy. Yir mods the bait harishona shei tashku imanu, but su otanu kama machokot the kama mukhamor achshichribuhu. We struggled in various groups and wars until it was destroyed. Hasheni karashemotitna, the second is called hatred. Shame kashem harishon, a more difficult name, a more tough name than the first. Vehu habait hasheni shekara otol kishmo shekatub bo. And he quotes a passage in Ezra where they talk about the trouble that the nations gave us in building the second temple. And all of the days there was enmity. Maybe he's talking about the fact that most of Beit Shani were actually under foreign occupation, be it the Persians, the Greeks, or the Romans. And the only exception was after Hanukkah. And the third is called Rechovot. Great expanse, relief. This is the future Beit Midrash. There will be none without any argument or disagreement. In other words, what does he do? He sees the entire thing on a more symbolic level. Now, again, to understand this, you have to understand a principle in the Ramban, and I see our time is running out, so I'll mention it with Kitzur, but the next two sources talk about this, and this is the principle of what he calls, we call it Masa Avot Siman Labanim, or as he quotes from the Midrash Tanchuma, Kol Ma She'ira La'Avot Siman Labanim. The idea that history can be cyclical, the idea that history not only educates for the future, but that the Torah contains in it the seeds of future events, gives us information of future events. But I'd say even more than that. If you look at the comment here, in Bereshit Perek Yudbet, Pasuk Vav, the last one, he starts talking about that what happens to the forefathers will happen to the sons, and that's why we are told so much about our forefathers. But then, afterwards, in the second paragraph, he says, Vada, he called Zerat Irin, and he starts talking Kabbalistic stuff. He starts explaining a concept which he explains more symbolically at the first level, and then explains it Kabbalistically again. What I'm saying is that the Ramban is able to see any given parasha on multiple levels. On a level which is pshat, just the details of the story, as if it was a piece of prose and what has to be analyzed. On a second level, on a symbolic level. The third level, its history predates the creation of the world and tells us all the secrets which underlie, and this is again a very Kabbalistic approach. And we should realize that on all sorts of different parashiyot, the Ramban will have fold multi-stratified commentary. So broadly what we've spoken about today, if I can summarize, our first 15 minutes, or maybe bibliography of the Ramban, and we wanted to show how the Ramban is so connected to tradition. He almost has a knee-jerk reaction to defend tradition against the new kid on the block. Second, we came along and we started looking at the Ramban's sources of his Kabbalistic readings and his understanding that the Torah is far more than just a book, but it contains all sorts of secrets of the world. And what we now have tried to do is see the fact that the Ramban's explanation exists in multiple levels. He's incredibly comprehensive. Pshat, trying to understand the context, the language, the wording, the details in their own right. Number two, symbolic understandings. We saw last time, grappling with Chazal's traditional readings, where Chazal come along and say, no, Nimrod's a bad guy, he'll go with that. The Ish is an angel, he'll go with that. And he'll try and understand it. And then, even other levels, which are Kabbalistic levels. So, this is the Ramban, incredibly comprehensive. We've spoken about the fact that he tries to really see a text in its full, broad context, and I hope you gain the appetite to go this Shabbat and open the Ramban and read a little more. Any questions? I'm happy. I'm here. Happy in the chat or. Sound. Okay, as I say every week, I'll stay online on the chat for a little bit more. I'll turn off the camera. I'll be here for a minute or two. Anybody who wants to write a question is welcome to. Wish everybody a happy Hanukkah, a Hanukkah Sameach. All our kids are off school now for the next week, and that's what we're going to do. Okay, I see a question from Neil. How is the Ramban's method of discussing by difference between Shem and Rashi differently from Rashi? I would say the following. As we saw in our first class, and we haven't had such an opportunity to really work it through Rashi more frequently, and I'd even say more often than not, adopts Midrashic readings. Rashi is not interested in the integrity of any single pasuk, and certainly not of a parasha, most of the time. He will even bring contradictory explanations, and he's not methodologically consistent. I'm not trying to bash Rashi. Rashi has a different agenda. Rashi wants to try and understand why each word is there and try and understand each word according to where it appears throughout Tanakh. And frequently, he's more bothered with understanding the presence of a single word than to understand the entire pasuk and certainly the entire paragraph as a single continuum. And therefore, his notion of pshat is radically different from what we nowadays call pshat. And as I say, the vast majority of the time, Rashi brings midrashic explanations which certainly add vast amounts to the text. So when Rashi talks about pshat, maybe he's talking about the word lifshot, to extend the text, the extent of the text, but he's not talking about what we generally call, which is a grammatical reading with minimum outer information, which accords with the syntax and grammar and context and logic of the text alone. No, the Rashi is far from that. The Ramban allows himself to do that. Now, it's interesting because, of course, he doesn't want to depart from Chazal. So frequently he'll have al derech hapshat, like we saw, just reading the text without any sort of tradition of Chazal. And then he'll go al derech rabotenu. And that way he can actually straddle both the rabbinic tradition and the actual, try and weave some sort of middle way. So as I say, if you want, it sounds like Rashi, even though, of course, Rashi knew what we nowadays call Pshat, in his Perush, he doesn't seem to distinguish. Whereas the Ramban certainly does. He understands Rabotenu, he understands what we nowadays call Pshat, and he will frequently treat them and a dialogue between them, try and find some way between the two of them. So I hope that answers the question. Okay, everybody have a good week. Hanukkah Sameach. Great. Looking forward to seeing everybody next time.